Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is WTIC's Law Talk, a project of the Hartford County Bar Association. If you have a legal question, call now, 860-522-WTIC or 800-966-WTIC. And now, it's time for Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Yes, it is. Good afternoon, everybody. Delighted to be with you. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar, and we're going to be here right up until 1 o'clock with some carefully curated legal vignettes from recent legal news. The whole purpose is to give you some information that you can use, give you some information that hopefully you'll find educational, and if somewhere in between there's a little bit of entertainment value, that's okay also. As always, we're very interested in helping you out with your legal issue. You allow us to do that by calling us on air, and we'll put you on and see if we can't help you out. Here's how you do that. The number, 860-522-9842. Again, 860-522-WTIC. That's what the numbers translate to. We're here until 1 o'clock, and then it's news, sports, weather, and pet talk. If you're thinking about giving us a call concerning a legal issue, legal question, legal statement you want to make, better to do it earlier in the program than later. That makes sure that we'll have the time to give you the attention that you deserve. So, that said, and with the idea that we're looking forward to hearing from you, let me tell you what we got lined up for today, okay? First topic is going to be a carryover from last week because I think it's very important and we just didn't get to it. What's that, you ask? Well, last week, because it was the 4th of July weekend, because it was a big celebration weekend, and because the state police and local police were all over the place doing arrests for drunk driving and all kinds of other stuff, we basically went through a bunch of things. What to do if you're stopped for DUI to not make it worse, what to do at court, but we did not get to something that is poorly understood, and we're going to go into it. What happens if you refuse to take a test, the intoxilizer test, back at the police station, or they claim that you refuse to take the test? Can you appeal that? And if so, how does that work out? So we're going to finish up our little trifecta of motor vehicle information with that piece there. Next up, we're going to take a trip to the federal court in New Haven. There's a matter that involves Christopher Columbus, the city of New Haven, and a group that sued the city called American Italian Women for Greater New Haven. And if you suspect that this might have something to do with the removal of a statue, you'd be correct. We're going to go into exactly how it is that a group has standing to make these claims and what it is that the judge did in this particular case. Okay. After that, everybody sees the name Limited Liability Company or the initials LLC. If you're hiring a tradesman, if you see a sign on the side of a truck that somebody says that they're an LLC, well, we're going to go into that and we're going to explain a little bit more about exactly what that is so that you have a better idea. If you happen to be in business or you're thinking about using something like this, we'll tell you some advantages, we'll tell you some disadvantages, we'll tell you about setting it up, and in particular about maintaining it. Very, very important. And what happens if you ignore some of those issues? Finally, if we get to it, we're going to talk a little bit about what's happened with some of the so-called remote hearings, which were conducted during the height of the pandemic at state court here in Connecticut. Remote hearings are still continuing for the most part. And we've got a case that's just come down from the Supreme Court, whether or not somebody's constitutional rights may have been impaired because there were technical issues regarding their ability to participate. So we've got all of that, and we've got a couple of open lines for your calls at 860-522-WTIC. That's 860-522-9842. He stuttered. First up, George in Hartford. Hi, George. You're on Law Talk, and tell us how we can help you. Hi.
Hello?
George.
Yes.
Okay. You're on the air. Tell us how we can give you a hand. I understand you got a question about a lease expiring.
Yes. It's a, the main question, I guess, there are other issues, but the one that I'm having that's a primary concern right now, but there's others that have been issues as well around asbestos and lead. But the one I want to address first is I have Section 8. I've been on it since 2002 or 2001.
Okay.
And I've been at the same address since then. Gone through three landlords. This is the third one. And I'm getting a... first thing that happened was I had an intermittent water heater that was going on and off, and the landlord, and it was dirty water in the tank.
Yeah.
It's 40 years old. It was put in 1981, and it needs to be replaced. But, I mean, the issue is that it's intermittent, all right, and it doesn't go off all the time, but it trips a breaker probably once a month. And then the water gets dirty, and he has to drain the tank, and then he turns the breaker back on, and it works. You know, and it's good for, you know, it's hard to predict when the next time that's going to happen.
Okay.
So
what's your question, George?
My lease expires, and it's due to be renewed because I have Section 8 August 1st.
Okay.
And I received, first of all, notice to quit. Well, first thing I received was a notice for non-renewal of lease.
Yeah, it's probably called a cap and notice. Go ahead.
That he didn't want to accept month to month, and he didn't want to, you know, go with use and occupant. He just didn't want to renew the lease, and that was the first thing that happened. And then about 30 days later, at that point I had paid my rent on May 28th, and then he gave me a receipt for June 1st for occupancy only, when I had a rental agreement, you know, till July 30th.
Okay. So, George, you got a number of issues there, as you told us right in the beginning. So I'm going to try to address a couple of them for you and for our listeners, okay? First of all, you've mentioned that you do have Section 8 benefits. The important thing right off the top is that your rights as a tenant are exactly the same as everyone else's. And I think it's important for landlords to hear that, and certainly for tenants. I believe that you probably are fully aware of that, but I think it's important for people to realize that the source of the rental payments is irrelevant as far as your rights go. And in fact, here's a note to your landlords: it is illegal to discriminate against anybody based upon the source of their rental payments. Now, you talked about the hot water heater working intermittently and this particular problem. Whether or not that complies with the building code or the life safety codes and so on is a function of what the building department or the health district says. You're in Hartford, so it would be the health department. All I can say is that you have to complain to them, and I know you may not get very much in the way of a response, but they're the ones that are going to have to either back you up or back him up, and they have the authority to make him fix it or replace it if, in fact, that's what they believe is necessary. So those are two points that I hope help you very much, George. And we're going to have to take a break for a break here. So I'm going to thank you for calling, and we'll see if we can't help you out on a future date. Okay? Thanks, George. Okay, you're listening to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. We've got a bunch of topics. We've got several lines open, and we are welcoming your call so we can put you on the air and help you out, and in the process help some other people that are listening with similar issues. The number here, 860-522-9842. That's 860-522-WTIC, and more of Law Talk after this. All right, welcome back to Law Talk right here, WTIC News Talk 1080, WTIC.com, streaming audio on the net. You've got a friend or relative that's outside the range of this 50,000-watt AM station, think they might be interested in what we're discussing, think they might want some legal advice over the air, tell them to give us a call. They can listen on TIC.com, and we'd be happy to hear from them just as well as anybody else. Just a follow-up to George in Hartford, who was our last call just a moment ago, I think it's important for everybody to realize that the Section 8 housing program, which supplements the payments that a person is himself or herself able to make to the landlord, is a very, very well-established program. In our private practice, back when we used to do housing work, we represented landlords who hated it. We represented landlords who thought it was the greatest thing that came along. The point here is that if you are a recipient of Section 8 benefits, your rights are the same, exactly the same as any other tenant. And there's a specific statute in Connecticut regarding the anti-discrimination rules, and it is illegal, specific violation of the statute, to discriminate on the basis of the source of somebody's rental income. So, word to the wise, to the landlords out there. Okay. Now, one of the things that I told you we'd be doing today, and I think this is probably pretty much just about as important as what we did last week regarding the driving while intoxicated business. Remember that we set the stage. John got pulled over to the side of the road, hypothetically, not really. We told you how it is that you handle yourself with the officer, not to make things any worse than they would be otherwise. We talked about what happens when you get to court. Well, we're going to talk briefly about what's called a per se license suspension and what you can do about it. You have a appeal rights. Are they more illusory than real? Well, we're going to discuss that because you may find yourself in this situation. Here's how it comes up. If the officer that pulls you over believes that he or she has probable cause to believe that you are driving under the influence, okay, then what happens is you're taken back to the police station and you're given what's called an intoxilizer test. You're going to blow into a tube, and this machine is going to convert your blood alcohol content into a schedule. And if you're over 18, you have a point, over 21, you have a 0.08 ratio of alcohol to, let's see, is it deciliters per milliliter? Whatever. But it's 0.08 is the turning point. Now, you have to blow into the machine. And some people are physiologically challenged for doing this for various reasons that are not their fault. They can't do it. Other people figure, hey, this is a great idea. I'll simply struggle and struggle and say, I can't do it, I can't do it, and it won't be a refusal. But at the same time, they won't get the damning evidence as to what my blood alcohol content is, because Lord knows what they're going to do in court with that when I go there for my criminal charges. So here's what happens, okay? If you end up not blowing into the machine, either because you refused outright or because you supposedly tried and tried but just couldn't do it, you're going to end up with a refusal. The standard practice, as I'm understanding it, is that the officer is going to stop. He's going to he or she's going to explain again how to do it. You're going to get a second chance, sometimes a third chance. But if you still cannot do it, or if you just refused, they're going to write you up as a refusal. So why should you care? Well, here's why. Because here's what happens, okay? That's a refusal. There's going to be an automatic license suspension. Now, remember, you not only haven't been convicted of anything yet, you haven't even set foot inside a courtroom. So this suspension occurs, but you do have the right to appeal it. So let's talk a little bit about that, because this is something that has been a very fertile field for litigation on this issue, especially because the importance of having a driver's license and so on. Okay? The law says that if you take this appeal, and you'll be notified with your suspension that you have the right to do it, there are only four issues to be decided. So I'm going to tell you what those issues are, and I'm going to tell you who decides them. And then we'll attack them and see what has merit in your case and what does not. Okay? First of all, here are the four issues, and we're going to go back over them, so let me just go through them quickly. Number one, was there probable cause to arrest you for DUI? Number two, were you operating a motor vehicle? Number three, were you arrested? And number four, did you refuse to submit to a test? Now, testing, we've talked about the intoxilizer testing at the police department. Technically, there are two other tests that, in theory, are available to you. There's a blood test, there's a urine test. So here's what happens. If you say that, well, I'm not going to blow in that machine, I'm going to insist on a blood test. The trouble is that it involves the drawing of blood from your person. And under Connecticut law, the only people that are permitted to do that are certain trained and licensed healthcare practitioners. A couple of examples: a physician, a registered nurse, a phlebotomist. There may be a couple of others in there. So now you're at the police station and they're telling you that you're going to take the intoxilizer breath test, and you say, no, I want a blood test. Well, here's the problem. There's nobody there who is going to be legally qualified to draw the blood. They're not going to take you to the emergency room because those folks basically have other stuff to do. They're concerned about treating people who are ill or are injured. So you're not going to be a high priority. And guess what? You got to take that test within 2 hours of operation or it's not going to apply. So forget about the blood test. It's not going to happen. Urine test has a whole set of different issues involved, and that's almost as unpopular with the officers as the blood test. So by default, we're back to the intoxilizer, and you've got these four questions that I just mentioned that are going to have to be addressed. Okay, the first thing, who's going to conduct this appeal? Now, you have a hearing. It's a live hearing. You're not just submitting some kind of a written statement. The hearing is going to be conducted by a Department of Motor Vehicles hearing officer. And this is not a judge. This is an employee, typically a part-time employee of the Department of Motor Vehicles. So you're not going to have the same setting that you would in a court of law. Second thing to keep in mind is that these hearings are done under what's called the Connecticut Administrative Procedures Act. Why would you care? Here's why. The standards for admitting evidence are way different. The standards for including testimony or excluding it, for example, as hearsay, are way different also. If the hearing officer believes that something has some probative value, or if it's more probative than prejudicial, they're going to admit it for whatever weight it requires. Now, you are going to have this hearing, and whether you try to do it yourself or if the stakes are high enough for you, get an attorney who has experience in them. The first thing that happens is that the police officer who wrote you up and did the paperwork, generally speaking, is not even going to be there to testify, unless you or your attorney subpoenas that officer to come. Well, how are they going to get the report in? Simple. Remember I said it's the Administrative Procedure Act rules? The report's called an A44, and as long as it's signed and otherwise appears to be in order, that hearing officer is going to admit it automatically. They do not want to spend a lot of time getting police officers to do something perfunctory, okay? Now, if that appears to be in order, unless there's a glaring deficit with it, which you can point out to the hearing officer, that's all that they need to uphold the suspension of your license. So let's go and take a look at these four issues, which are the only issues that you can raise and that you have to persuade that at least one of them was not met. First one, was there probable cause to arrest you for DUI? Okay. If you are coming out of the parking lot of the bar that closed 5 minutes ago and it's 1:05 in the morning and it appears that you may be swerving or driving erratically, guess what? The officer's got probable cause. So it's unlikely you're going to get very far there unless there's some extremely unusual circumstances. The officers are well-trained. They know how to write up these reports to show that there was probable cause to arrest you. That's just one example. It also has to do with their observations of you as they approach the vehicle. It has to do with your performance of the field sobriety tests, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Second thing that has to be established, were you operating a motor vehicle? Sounds real simple. Well, here's what's happened. Okay. All of these things tend to grow in different directions, and that's what makes them interesting. Case in point, person is passed out behind the wheel of the car they were driving. They're pulled over into a private parking lot, a Walmart or something like that, and they're not operating the vehicle in the sense most of us think of. Does that mean that they were operating a motor vehicle? Guess what? The case law that's emerged said that's sufficient. If you're there and you're in a position to restart that vehicle and it looks like you had been operating it, that's probably going to qualify as operating a motor vehicle. We used to tell people, well, if you're going to be in that position, take the keys out of the ignition, turn off the motor, and go sleep in the back seat. And the purpose of that was to try to set the stage for a claim that you were not operating. But then again, it doesn't seem to get a lot of traction. Okay. Number three, were you arrested? Seems pretty obvious, and we've never attacked one of those. We're going to get to number four about refusal very shortly, but I'm told that we're breaking for news, sports, and weather. Law Talk's going to return after all of that.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Okay, welcome back to Law Talk, second half for this early mid-July Saturday. I'm Attorney John Matulis from the Hartford County Bar Association. One last little piece about going to the Motor Vehicles Department to appeal your suspension for allegedly refusing to take a breath test. Last one there, did you refuse to submit to the test? Lots of creative stuff goes on here. As I mentioned in the beginning, there are some folks who are physiologically unable to blow into the machine. That's not a refusal. And then there's a lot of folks who figure, well, if I try and it looks like I can't do it, that won't be a refusal and I won't get the enhanced suspension that otherwise I'm going to get. So here's the story. If you take this breath test and you are unable to blow into the machine, but the officer writes it up as a refusal anyway, you want to take an appeal to the Commissioner of Motor Vehicles and have that hearing officer decide it. Here's what you need to do. If you have a physiological problem which prevents you from blowing into the machine or blowing with sufficient force or vigor into the machine, then you need good, solid medical evidence. You need something in writing from your primary care provider or something from the specialist that you're seeing for this problem, whether it's a pulmonologist or whoever it is. They need to be able to provide something in writing on the letterhead stating that A, you are a patient, B, that you suffer from such and such a problem, and C, that it is their professional opinion that the nature and the severity of the problem as you experience it would prevent you from blowing with sufficient force into the machine. That would probably clear that up. Now, this is not going to work if you decide, well, I'm going to some walk-in on the way and I'm going to tell them I need something like this. It's got to be pretty legitimate. And if it's a problem for which you are being treated on a regular basis, that should be mentioned also. So that's the word of advice that we have as far as that's concerned. The takeaway on all of this is that if you're going to appeal this decision, bear in mind, A, not a judge, it's a hearing officer, B, rules of evidence do not apply. It's the rules of the Administrative Procedures Act. It is way easier for them to allow hearsay and documents that are not authenticated and things of that nature. Okay. And the final point here is that if you are going to claim that you did not refuse to submit to the test and it's on the basis of some physiological condition, document it just as thoroughly as you can. There are people that have even brought the physician or the provider to the hearing to testify. That's great. It's extremely expensive, and assuming the provider is even willing to do that. But when the penalties are severe enough, that's what gets to be considered. Okay, before we get back to some of the other topics that we've got lined up, just want to remind you of two things. First of all, would love to hear from you today. If you've got a legal question, a legal comment, a legal issue that you want some help with, our number, 860-522-9842. That's 860-522-WTIC. Second thing, this is the part of the program where I am to remind you that if you do not have a lawyer and you're looking for some legal advice other than what we can give you over the air here, the Hartford County Bar Association operates a not-for-profit, underline that, not-for-profit lawyer referral service. They have a large panel of lawyers. They have been vetted. Every one of them is insured and has to prove it. Every one of them is free of disciplinary problems, and that gets checked. Every one of them is experienced in the particular part of the practice of law that they they need to help you. If you've got a matter concerning, say, a DUI issue of the sort that we were just discussing here, well, guess what? If you have a real estate lawyer, that's not going to be the best help. They will get you somebody who practices in the right area to help you. So how do you access them? What do you get and what does it cost? You access them by calling them on the phone number that I'm going to give you in just a moment. So have a pencil ready. That's how you reach these folks, okay? What do you get and what does it cost? What you get is a half-hour consult with an attorney from this panel, an attorney who practices in the area that is going to be helpful for your issue, okay? And so the half-hour consult can be over the telephone. It can be in person in the lawyer's office if that's what the two of you choose to do. It can also be Zoom or something of that sort, Microsoft Teams, however you want to do it. The end of the half hour, no further obligations whatsoever. No hard sell about doing anything further. However, if further legal services are desired, it's up to the two of you. If you choose to make a deal to go forward together, that's fine. If the two of you never have any further interaction with each other, that's fine also. This is done as much as a public service as anything else, okay? As far as the cost, okay? Typical garden variety question, there's a one-time only fee of $35 for the half-hour consult, which is just a fraction of what that is worth with an experienced attorney in private practice. But there's a little bit more. If you're calling about your personal injury claim, they will waive the $35. You get the half-hour consult for free. If you're calling about your Social Security disability claim, guess what? Same thing, no $35 fee, no fee at all. Well, you say you don't have either one of those, but you've got this workers' comp claim and you need help with that. You're right in that category too. They will waive the $35 fee for you also. This is a good deal, and here's how you access it, okay? You phone them at 860-525-6052. That's 860-525-6052. That is the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service. And I know that some of you are listening online. You're probably far removed from Hartford County, and you're asking yourself, well, what can they do for me? Well, I'll tell you what they can do, because they've done this numerous times. These programs are all based on a model that's promulgated by the American Bar Association. There are lots of them all across the country. So if you're looking to access a similar program near you, call them up and they'll tell you where the closest one is. I understand that they've helped people find similar programs in California, in Nevada, in North Carolina, Florida. So these are programs that exist in a lot of locations. You may not stumble across one of those, but call them here. They'll be happy to help you out. That is the Hartford County Bar Association's not-for-profit lawyer referral service at 860-525-6052. That's 860-525-6052. Get your lawyer and your legal advice from them. Don't bother with some lawyer on a billboard or somebody who's got some splashy internet ad. You're just not sure what you're getting. Okay, that's the word, and tell them Law Talk sent you. So here's a case from the federal court in New Haven. Judge Janet Hall decided this one, and here are the characters in this little drama. This is a lawsuit brought by a group called the American Italian Women for Greater New Haven. The defendant is the city of New Haven. It involves Christopher Columbus. And as I mentioned in the beginning, if you suspect this may have something to do with a statue, you would be exactly correct. So here's the background on this. Statue of Christopher Columbus was located in Worcester Square in New Haven for a very long time. Well, it was removed from Worcester Square, which happens to be a public park in New Haven. That's an important fact, as you'll see as we get further into this. Okay, so the plaintiffs, the American Italian Women for Greater New Haven, accused the city of having a pro African-American and an anti-American, anti-Italian-American policy. So they brought this lawsuit in federal district court based on the removal of the statue of Christopher Columbus. So we're going to tell you basically what happened, and we're going to use this as a platform. We're going to talk about, well, how's an organization have standing to do this anyway? What do they have to show? And perhaps most important of all, what did the Honorable Janet Hall do with this case? Okay, so the starting point of this is great. This is the way the judge started her decision. Quote, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. 400 years later, the city of New Haven erected a statue in his honor. Ceremony on October 12, 1892, Mayor of New Haven dedicated the statue. It was a gift from approximately 200 Italian immigrants who had settled in New Haven. Close quote. Okay, that is the way Judge Hall started this issue. Now, the statue stood in Worcester Square ever since 1892. So that sounds like 130 years or something thereabouts. Now, the plaintiffs, the Italian American, the American Italian Women Group, basically says that they use this regularly. The statue itself had been an important focal point of their organizational activities. Well, how's that, you might ask? They allege in their lawsuit that the group meets in Worcester Square, among other activities, for the Cherry Blossom Festival. They recruit members there, and they conduct an annual wreath-laying ceremony at the base of the statue with approximately 40 other Italian heritage groups. Okay, so that's the backdrop on all of this. Now, they allege that in 2020, the New Haven Board of Park Commissioners had a meeting, that there was nothing on the agenda about the statue, but nonetheless, the New Haven Board of Park Commissioners came to a consensus the statue should be removed during that meeting, but they didn't even take a formal vote on it. So the city is going to remove the statue, but the American Italian Women for Greater New Haven file this lawsuit seeking injunctions and claiming discrimination and so on and so on. So the first question is, well, how does a group have standing to do this? Do they have standing to do it? And if so, how's that work? So here's the answer, okay? The phrase in the law, it's called associational standing, or it's also called representational standing. So the group that's the plaintiff, in this case the American Italian Women for Greater New Haven, they have to show that some particular member of the organization would have had standing to bring the suit individually. Okay, and the second way they would do it is if they don't have that, they have to show that the group itself has been injured. They have to show either an injury or an imminent injury in fact to itself as an organization, but not to its members. And the injury has to be traceable to the challenged act, which in this case was the removal of Christopher Columbus statue and so on. So that's the whole story. The city of New Haven filed a motion to dismiss, said that, nah, they don't have standing, and even if they did, they haven't stated a claim that the court can really grant them relief. So we're going to tell you what happened, but I'm being told very correctly, time for a break, so to stay on schedule, we're going to come back to that, and we're going to do that after this break. You're listening to Law Talk on WTIC News Talk 1080, and we'll come back to see how the American Italian Women for Greater New Haven did in their lawsuit regarding the removal of the Christopher Columbus statue. We're doing all of that right after this. Okay, welcome back to Law Talk right here on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're continuing with the saga of the Italian-American Women Organization of New Haven suing the city of New Haven for the removal of the Christopher Columbus statue from Worcester Square. So we've already pointed out that the city of New Haven was moving to dismiss the action, said they had no standing, and even if they did have standing, they didn't really recite a claim that they were entitled to any relief. So what did Judge Janet Hall do with this? Okay. First of all, on the issue of standing, she basically said, well, they never mentioned any individual member that was somehow harmed by this. So therefore, they failed on point one, which is associational standing. So that meant that they had to have their own specific standing and that the organization itself had to be harmed in some fashion. So Judge Hall went back and she looked at their claims. And remember I mentioned up front in the quote that they had a wreath laying ceremony on Columbus Day every year. Well, the judge says the allegation about the wreath laying ceremony was very, very important. And she said that because they visit the monument regularly with the specific purpose of using it as the focal point for celebrating what still remains a federal holiday, that was going to show that they were going to have a loss that was personal to them with the removal of the statue. End result conclusion. Accordingly, the court concludes that AIW has organizational standing to bring its claim. So they're into court. Now we get to the second question that the city of New Haven raised is, are they going to be entitled to relief? Well, they allege discrimination based on national origin, and the court goes through a summary of all of that there. And basically, in order to prevail on that, they have to allege facts which show that they were deprived of equal use and enjoyment of a covered facility's services and facts which demonstrate discriminatory intent. Okay, that's a mouthful, but that's the test involved here. And the judge gets right to the point. She said, the plaintiff's argument fails for the simple fact that they have not been denied access to Worcester Square in any way. And so she chose to focus on the fact that they could still go to the square. They could engage in any and all other activities that they did before, just that the statue of Christopher Columbus isn't there anymore. So the judge concluded, accordingly, they failed to allege any denial of access or different treatment than other visitors, which was required to sustain a claim of the sort that they made. So end result, City of New Haven prevails. The American Italian women of Greater New Haven are not able to enjoin the removal of the statute or to get damages. The judge said, however, she dismissed the case without prejudice, and she gave them 21 days to replead it if they chose to do so, in which they would have to address these shortcomings. And if they did not, then the case would be dismissed with prejudice. So what's that mean? Well, it got dismissed, but they can do it and fix it if they can. However, after 21 days, if they haven't done it, then it's dismissed with prejudice, which means it has now been decided in finality and that the court has spoken, and that is what happened. So that's the story of the American Italian Women for Greater New Haven versus the City of New Haven, which chose to remove the statue of Christopher Columbus and what followed in federal court. Okay, so what's the takeaway on that? The takeaway on that is that your organization will have standing to bring a claim if either any of its members would have had standing, or what's called organizational standing if the organization itself suffered some kind of injury or damage that was specific to it. But because they still had access to the park, albeit without the statue of Christopher Columbus, no harm done there, and the judge dismissed the case. So we're going to move from the courtroom over to the business side, and we're going to focus on three letters. Those letters are LLC. A lot of you know that stands for Limited Liability Company, not corporation, but company. Well, what is this? It has been basically the primary way that people setting up an entity to do business have done it. It goes back to 1993 or thereabouts when Connecticut passed a law permitting these for the first time. And they're modeled on a German device. And this is something where if you see the name of a German company and it has the letters GmbH after it, that means something in German which is similar to our limited liability company laws. So why does somebody want to do this? I mean, we already had corporations, we had partnerships. Good question. Here's the answer. This little device provides the best features of a corporation and the tax benefits of a partnership or a sole proprietorship. So let me be a little more specific, okay? The best features of a corporation, at least as far as I'm concerned, are that it insulates the people operating the business from personal liability for corporate debts or for corporate faults or anything of that nature. The tax benefits feature, corporate taxes are typically higher than individual taxes unless you're talking about a subchapter S corporation, and that's a little different story for another day. So by creating this entity called a limited liability company, the legislature enabled people to achieve those two separate benefits in a much easier and much less expensive fashion. Now, Connecticut is not exactly alone in this. At this point, I think nearly every state in the union has similar laws to this. That's how popular it has been. So here is the quick overview for those of you that may be interested and may want to set one of these up. First of all, I recommend, for reasons that we're going to get into in just a moment, that you use an attorney to do it. But you can download a form from the Secretary of the State's office. The form is called Articles of Organization. It's 2 pages. It's pretty simple to fill out. If you complete it and submit it with a $120 fee, poof, now you're in limited liability company or an LLC. But that part of it is not where the real thrust of the effort is, and it's not where you need the attorney. The operating agreement, okay? That's the part that's way more complex and that has to be basically customized to your specific situation. What's an operating agreement? It's similar to the bylaws of a corporation. It's very, very important. If this entity is going to borrow any money, the lender is going to demand to see a copy of it. And the reason for that is they want to know who has the authority to borrow the money and how the organization is set up, how it's driven, and whether it complies with the law. Okay? Operating agreements are basically the roadmap for how the organization operates its own internal affairs. They are also tax-driven. There is a lot of tax concepts that are taken from partnership tax law, including operating accounts and chargebacks and all kinds of things that make their way into these. So there's more to it than you think. Now, then you've got a question, well, who's going to run this operation? Members can run it, or a single member can run it, or you can have a manager that may not even be a member, but is a professional who is going to operate the entity. These entities can be as small as a one-person LLC. They can be basically of almost unlimited size, okay? That has to specify the different membership interests. Not everybody has the same interest. It's going to be based in part on what the individual members contribute to the LLC. You can also set it up so who gets to vote on business and who does not. If you're going to receive distributions, you don't automatically have a vote. It depends on what the operating agreement says. These can also be useful ideas in estate planning, and there are a number of different ways that these come into the picture. Okay. One of the things you have to be aware of is if a member wants to leave, this will specify how they do it. If you need to throw a member out, this specifies how you do it. Short of that, you're going to have all kinds of hassles and all kinds of problems. So those are just some of the issues. We will talk more about annual filings, how to do that, why it is that's important, and the ultimate sanction. The Secretary of the State will dissolve your entity if you don't do the proper numbers of filings. But that is for another day. The music in the background, my cue to wrap up yet another Law Talk. So that's exactly what I'm going to do by saying my thank yous. First of all, thanks to those of you that have listened. We're delighted to know that you're out there, and we hope that you continue to find the program helpful. Thanks very much to my producer, Tom. He's the one who makes this program work. If you've enjoyed it and it sounded good, he gets the credit. You got any problems with it? That would be me. So we're going to be back next week with more of Law Talk. Until then, please stay well, enjoy your week, and as they say around here, see ya.
Law Talk is presented as a public service by the Hartford County Bar Association. Its content is intended to be educational and informative, but is not considered to be formal legal opinion. If you want or need a formal legal opinion upon which to rely on decision-making, please consider formally engaging an attorney to review all relevant facts in detail and examine the pertinent law as it applies to those facts. A solid opinion means better decisions. The views expressed during this program are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of the Hartford County Bar Association, its officers, or its directors.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.